church, performance or participation, learning from the lockdown, written and read by David H.J. Gay. Introduction. As I write in the spring of 2020, the UK government's response to the COVID-19 virus, the lockdown, is having a massive impact on us all, the effects of which will not quickly fade when normality returns. Naturally, believers in their churches have not been exempt from this upheaval, and they have quickly responded. Since it raises some very serious questions, I want to subject that response to Scripture. Two issues are of particular concern. First, many churches, perhaps most, have reacted to the banning of public meetings by live streaming, that is, by means of a digital package transmitted over the internet. They broadcast an approximate church service which anyone can watch and or listen to live as it happens, or later according to choice. The truth is, however, that live streaming is hardly a fitting description for much of it. Since meetings are banned, many so-called live services are cut-and-paste jobs, carefully produced and then posted at the normal service time. Even so, the live streamers are ensuring that people can virtually attend a church service. Some go further and include a form of baptism and the Lord's Supper. Second, some churches have used the internet to set up small groups which allow and nurture intensive interaction between participants who are specially invited to tune in. In this way, some believers are talking to each other far more than they would have done. In the main, I will be addressing the first of these two responses. This must not be taken to mean that the second is unimportant. Indeed, since small numbers with mutual interaction is precisely what believers experienced and valued in the ecclesia in the days of the New Testament, I see this reaction to the lockdown as a very healthy sign, and I want my book to encourage the reality when things get back to normal. But it is the large meetings and live streaming on which I want to concentrate. The technology, of course, was there before the crisis. Nevertheless, with the crisis, such internet activity has mushroomed. From the evidence I have seen, the provision of a church service is proving very popular, though not perhaps as spiritually beneficial as the bald statistics might indicate. Even so, the fact remains that live streaming is a response to the deeply felt need of the overwhelming majority of believers to attend church, that is, to go to a place of worship in order to worship God. While they cannot have the real or actual experience, they can at least have something like it in virtual form. None of this is of passing significance. Hence my subtitle, Learning from the Lockdown. Indeed, as I have said, this huge surge in internet activity raises underlying vital biblical principles, principles which we need to face, principles such as what we mean by worship, what we allude to when we speak of service, and what we understand by church. Take worship. What is it? How and when do believers worship God? And what is a service? When is a service not a service? Indeed, what is a church? And when is a church not a church? What part, if any, do numbers play? And so on. Unpopular as it will be to say it, shocking, incredible to many. Although going to church to be part of or experience a church service has been normal Christendom practice for most believers from time immemorial, it is quite unknown in the New Testament. This inevitably means that uncomfortable questions need to be asked and answered about what is going on. We must be honest and face facts, even if, especially if, some of those facts are unwelcome. We need to take a hard look at all this and do so with an open Bible. Hence my book. I am not alone, of course. Others are concerned. But although many are trying to think through the principles, in the blizzard of material which evangelical churches and their elders have produced in order to cope with the virus crisis, alas, I have come across scholastic and semantic reasoning of the angel and pinhead variety, much going outside scripture to find solutions, so-called, and the invention of new titles for services, the result of which is to dig even deeper holes for believers and the churches. We must do better than that. Nor must we allow the technology to lead us by the nose. Because we can do something, it does not mean we should do it. Tradition, sentiment, technology and the like are no substitutes for Scripture. Inevitably, we are children of our time. We cannot avoid the culture we have inherited, nor the culture we find ourselves in. But the world's culture must not call the shots. Scripture must always trump all. That was God's standing principle for Israel in the Old Covenant, Deuteronomy 4, Isaiah 8. And it remains the same for the Ecclesia in the New, Acts 17, Romans 15, 2 Timothy 3. Moreover, we must not be guilty of short-termism. A temporary solution to a pressing problem has a habit of turning into a permanent tradition. The UK government's knee-jerk reaction to a couple of crises 30 years ago is a case in point. Hastily produced knife and dog laws resulted in unforeseen consequences, tortuous ramifications, and serious complications, some of which dog us still. A closer parallel, one which had beneficial long-term effects, can be found in the medieval church's 1349 emergency relaxation of the rules of the last rites during the Black Death. This temporary easing allowed men to think heretical so-called thoughts, culminating in the work of John Wycliffe. All I am saying is that short-term can so easily and unintentionally turn out to be long-term. What will be the long-term effect of all this recent church use of the internet in response to the lockdown? What lessons can we as believers learn? Even more important, are there any changes that we need to make to what we have for centuries, without serious thought on the part of many, come to regard as normal practice, even as scriptural? Could it be that this lockdown is in part God's trumpet blast to awaken us to serious consideration and, if we find it necessary, reformation in our church life? If so, will we learn and, if need be, change? Can we? Or are things so deeply ingrained that nothing will shift us? When normality returns, will we simply drift back to things as they were before all this happened and take up where we left off? Even worse, will we pick up some bad habits during this time and turn them into the new norm? Or shall we recover some good, that is, scriptural practices? We can, of course, simply assume that what we were doing before the crisis and what we are now doing during the crisis is right, and carry on regardless. But as believers, this cannot be right. We must always be ensuring that we are scriptural. This book is my contribution to this necessary discussion. It consists of three parts. In part one, I briefly set out the New Testament teaching on the Ecclesia. Before we get to what we were doing, what we are now doing, and what we might be doing when the lockdown is lifted, it is essential for us to be clear about what we should be doing. In part two, I look at the contemporary church. Part three consists of various appendices. When quoting others, I have on occasion lightly edited the extracts, but never to change the sense. Indeed, I note any serious alteration.